And hello. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. And we're really happy to have some of our listeners join us on our up-and-coming trip to Jamaica at Echo Tours for Cures. You can see what we do by going to echotoursforcures.com or Facebook, Echo Tours for Cures Jamaica. And this is, I believe, around our 27th year of myself and Dr. Eugene Zamperone leading a tour to Jamaica, where we live with indigenous shamanic healers and have just a fantastic time and also have a lot to learn. So we call it, an ecological play vacation and education at the same time. So if you'd like to know more about that, any of our classes coming up in Chinatown to learn about Chinese herbal medicine, that's another Echo Tour that we run closer to home. And then we do many workshops where we go outside, gather wild plants, and make them into medicine. And those go on all year long in various places. For instance, in Florida right now. And we'll be back in the New York and Connecticut area in the spring. So today, we would love to invite you to listen in on our show that we have with our fabulous guest, and that is Dr. David Brady. Dr. Brady is a Connecticut and Vermont licensed naturopathic medical physician and is certified in clinical nutrition and has been in clinical practice for 24 years. He is also the Vice Provost of the Division of Health Sciences, Director of the Human Nutrition Institute, and Associate Professor of Clinical Sciences at the University of Bridgeport. And he is the Chief Medical Officer for Diagnostic Solutions Lab, as well as Designs for Health, and also practices at Hold Body Medicine in Fairfield, Connecticut, specializing in functional and nutritional medicine. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Brady.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your show again and to talk to you. It's always a lot of fun, so I look forward to it. And after you read that, I realized I have way too many jobs.
You know, I was just going to say, so Dr. Brady, when do you relax and what do you do for relaxation? When do you fit that in?
Oh, I have to take lots of adaptogenic botanicals to keep my adrenals in shape, you know. No,
really?
I just love everything I do, you know, and everything is really synergistic. Gets a little crazy and busy sometimes. I'm blessed by being a pretty efficient and good multitasker, and I like it all. I try to keep it in perspective, but I have two young boys at home, so I'm always at their sporting events, and I'm out skiing with them, and they keep me young, and they keep me moving and going, and so that's a lot of fun. So everything's good.
Yes, it is, and I'm so happy that you were able to find time in your incredibly busy schedule to join us today. So one of the things that we're going to do is talk about one of your other projects. And, of course, we read the list of how many that you have. One thing I'd like to talk about first, because you actually participated as a speaker at a conference that we ran, and one of the things we did with the proceeds of that conference is donate to a very important community clinic that I know you were involved in putting together. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, over here at the University of Bridgeport in Connecticut, we have our public community health care system for the university's health science division, and it's collectively known as the UB Clinics, and they're in the Health Science Center here on campus. And in that, we see the public, we see our university community, but we see patients from all over the region, actually. We see about 25 to 30,000 unique patient visits a year in that facility, and then we have a string of community clinics, you know, out in different areas throughout the region. But within that UB Clinics is the clinical facility for our College of Naturopathic Medicine. And we embarked in a process over the last 5 years or so to raise money and have a development campaign, actually build a whole brand new Center for Naturopathic Medicine, and it's now fully complete. I'm happy to say it's on the entire 8th floor of our Health Sciences Center, so it's about a 12,000 square feet cutting-edge, brand-new facility with beautiful treatment rooms and laboratories and learning spaces for interns and residents, and we do grand rounds in there with experts from all over the world. But it's basically a treatment facility for patients looking to have naturopathic physicians take an integrative, more holistic lifestyle approach to their problems, particularly complex chronic illness. And it doesn't hurt that while you're in the treatment rooms, you have a beautiful look over the Long Island Sound right over to you over there by Stony Brook. So it's a beautiful facility, and it's part of our community mission at UB to bring this type of, you know, functional integrative medicine to everybody, regardless of what their socioeconomic status or income may be. It's basically a low to no cost clinic, so you don't have to have insurance, you don't have to have a lot of money. So, you know, unfortunately what we've seen is a lot of the integrative, functional, really proactive lifestyle medicine has become somewhat of a medicine for people that have enough wealth to go out and pay for it themselves, because some of it's not covered by insurance and things like that. So we wanted to bring it to everybody. So that's a part of the mission of our entire UB clinic system, whether it's with acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, chiropractic, dental services. But the new clinic is for naturopathic medicine.
Well, thank you for all your really hard and focused work to make that come into reality. I know it's true. I've sent so many, probably hundreds of patients there over the years exactly for that reason. They'll start working with me. They'll come to my office. I'm a nurse. I cannot order blood work. You know, I can help them with their lifestyle and supplement choices, but certainly we need medical supervision and testing. And very often, when they do go to a holistically oriented physician, the costs are astronomical, and not everyone can go there. It's kind of become, as you said, Dr. Brady, the, you know, medicine for the elite only, which is too bad. So that is a great reason also just to come to the clinic for those of you who are considering a career in natural medicine, because I do give a course on natural health careers, which is very well attended. I have it available both online and on ground, because so many people are seeing that it's a wonderful way to become a healthcare professional, and you can actually help people. A lot of medical students and residents I talk to are kind of unhappy because they learn that it's not so much about cure as management with drugs. And yet the naturopathic model is find the cause, and actually with guidance, the person has to make changes, of course, treat the cause. Very, very better, much better focus.
Yeah, and if people want to know more about the UB clinics, they can just go to the University of Bridgeport's website at bridgeport.edu, and there's a tab under information for UB clinics. They can call 203-576-4349. That's if they're looking to be a patient in the UB clinics. And if they're interested in careers, I mean, we have wonderful training opportunities in naturopathic medicine and acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, chiropractic, nutrition, right on down the line, physician assistant, nursing. And it's really an integrative approach. So it's a great place to come and train. We have a lot of career changers, particularly in our online and hybrid programming, such as our Masters of Science in Nutrition program and our new Doctorate of Health Sciences program, which is for healthcare providers looking to go on and get doctoral training to become either academic instructors in health sciences or researchers in clinical facilities. So we're really excited about all of that.
And so am I. That's right home, right there in Bridgeport University. And, oh, wow, I'm looking out my window here in Florida, and I just have to share that I have these otters that are climbing and playing on my little hill outside my window. It's just so delightful. So I just want to share a little breath of Florida with our listening audience.
Oh, now, you had to do that, did you?
I'm sorry. I know you're there in Bridgeport, but I'll be back in that area come this spring.
It's so warm today, so it's good.
Excuse me? It's warm today. I heard that. I heard it's in the 50s and everything's melting.
Yeah, I know. Not good for skiing, but it's good for everyday life, I guess.
It's always something. So, Dr. Brady, there's another whole project, which is actually going to be a lot of our focus for today's discussion. So I want to introduce this to our listeners, because among the many, many projects that you're so deeply involved with, you are also with Diagnostic Solutions Laboratory, and you helped to develop and launch the first DNA/PCR molecular assay for GI pathogens, which is a stool test, and it's an FDA-approved methodology called the GI Microbial Assay Plus, or GI MAP. And those of you who listen to our archives, and of course all our shows at our archive here on PRN, will understand that you can come back and listen anytime if this gets a little complex, or if you'd like to get a GI microbial assay done, or let your professional know about it, they can listen to the show. So tell us a little bit, and in fact we're going to talk quite a bit, about this laboratory and this test, Dr. Brady.
Oh, well, let's see. Let's start at the beginning. Well, probably there's no hotter part of research in medical science right now than research into what's called the microbiome, which is essentially all the organisms, bacteria, viruses, fungi, parasites, and so forth, that live in harmony with us, on us, in us, around us, and how they affect our physiology and our state of health or lack of health. And there's nowhere where there's more exposure and more diversity of this microbiome than the bugs that live in our intestines, all the bacteria, viruses, parasites, once again, fungi. And, you know, there's a little bit of a controversy in the literature right now, but basically it's pretty, I can say with really good confidence that these bugs far outnumber the number of cells in our body. And they're basically in a tube running through the middle of us, which is called our intestinal tract, which is technically outside of us, but yet it runs through the middle of us. So it's kind of strange. But it's a really complex environment. All these microorganisms have the ability to help us and live in a sort of symbiotic relationship with us. They can help us digest our food. They can help make vitamins. They can keep other really bad organisms out, but they can also cause a lot of problems. Anyone who's ever had gastroenteritis or some sort of significant food poisoning or infection can attest to how bad you can feel if you get, you know, a significant infection with a really bad organism in the gut. And, you know, those are two extremes. You can have wonderful, healthy GI microbiota, we call it, which are the bugs, the community that lives in our intestinal tract, or you can have a really bad one. And there's lots of shades of gray in between. And it's affected by a lot of things, by the diet composition, what you eat every day, by your stress level, by drugs that you take, particularly antibiotics, anti-inflammatories, by consumption of alcohol. So a lot of things can really affect the GI microbiota. Stress can really affect it negatively. So the modern lifestyle has not been a friend to our GI microbiota. And a lot of people have shifts in the health of their GI tract, which translates into serious chronic illness. We now know that there are specific overgrowth patterns of certain bacteria or certain other organisms that when we find them in the gut, they're highly correlated with specific chronic diseases. And
okay, I want to just break in here 1 minute.
From cardiovascular disease to even now cancers. But the most fundamental link between bad populations of organisms growing in your intestines and the genesis of disease is with autoimmune disease. So inflammatory arthritides like rheumatoid arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis, autoimmune diseases from lupus to MS to diabetes even are linked to specific overgrowth patterns in the gut. So being able to test the GI environment in a very comprehensive way has emerged as being of paramount importance, not only in determining what a patient might have already, but what the real power is being able to test the GI environment and finding patterns that will lead to disease later. So truly being upstream and predictive by mapping the GI microbiota is an extremely powerful tool going forward, particularly
in patients who
have family histories of these disorders. So it's very, very important that we developed a new technology that was better at doing this, and that's what we did at Diagnostic Solutions Lab.
That's great. Now, are you able to hear me? Because I wanted to break in there a moment
ago. Yeah, I did, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I was off on a roll.
Okay, and it was interesting. I just wanted to emphasize a little bit of what you're talking about there and bring it into, remember, we have a lot of people listening, not just health professionals. So some of what you're saying, although it's all true, might be, I wanted to just bring it down a little bit to terms that people may have heard before. And
sure.
One is something that they always have heard because it's so much in the public sense, which would be called candida. And that, of course, is only one of many, many of these organisms that you talked about. But many times people read about different symptoms that they have and they decide they have something called candida. And, of course, that is one of those microbiota that you're discussing, only one, there's so many,
yep.
Which is normally present but then can overgrow. Yet when they go to their physician, conventional physician, they are told that there's no such thing as candida. How is that possible that they get, and they're told there's no such thing as leaky gut, which of course can also be called intestinal permeability. How is that possible that they're told that it doesn't exist when you're speaking science?
Well, there's, unfortunately, I have no other answer other than ignorance. They don't look at the medical literature because the medical literature is replete with firm evidence that you're right, candida at some level is detectable in virtually everybody, but if it becomes an opportunistic organism and overgrows because of a poor GI environment or the use of antibiotics or something like that, we know absolutely it can cause significant clinical symptoms, even if it's confined mainly to the gut. But, of course, candidiasis in the blood, can cause a lot of problems. And it's a well-known, established medical condition with a diagnostic code. So if someone's saying that candida doesn't exist, I mean, they're just not correct. I don't know what else to say.
I know,
as far as
leaky
gut or hyperpermeability goes, it used to be something that we talked about a lot in functional and integrative medicine, and conventional medical, physicians just trained in the very standard paradigm just were not taught that in school. It just was not on their radar. So I think there was just a general sense, if I didn't learn it at, in medical school, it can't possibly be important. And that's simply not true. And it's changed. It's shifted massively. I mean, you cannot look in immunology, gastroenterology journals right now without seeing papers specifically on hyperpermeability and leaky gut. And researchers like Alessio Fasano, who was at the University of Maryland for years, is now at Harvard and Mass General doing his work on leaky gut and celiac disease, has been a prolific author, and he's gotten a lot of traction on this concept in the most conventional institutions within medicine. So the landscape has entirely changed, but many of the older practitioners who just were never exposed to this are just not up to speed with it. That I hate to say that, but that's just the reality.
To me, it seems like it should be medical malpractice for people to not have to keep up. And I guess you can keep up by taking courses that are offered by the pharmaceutical companies, which won't usually address these issues.
Well, listen, there's a drug in development right now that treats leaky gut or intestinal hyperpermeability. It's in phase 3 trials. My prediction is the minute that drug hits the market and is the first approved drug to treat leaky gut, you will not be able to watch television in the evening without seeing commercials about leaky gut, just like we've seen with other disorders that supposedly didn't exist before there was a commercial agent that there was a lot of money to be made selling the treatment for. So I think that will change drastically within the next couple of years.
Well, you know what? That's news to me. And that's one of the reasons I love doing radio shows, especially with knowledgeable people like yourself, Dr. David Brady, because I never heard of the development of this drug. Now, preemptively, I just would like to ask your opinion of this drug in terms of possible adverse effects, or do we have that kind of information yet?
We really don't know yet. It's a zonulin receptor agonist, and what that means is it blocks the message that something that your body naturally produces called zonulin, it's produced by the intestinal cells to cause temporary leakiness in the gut, basically to let stuff through. So if you have a bacterial organism or a virus or some sort of organism that the gut's immune system locally on the surface called the mucosal immune system cannot handle, the body will strategically secrete this zonulin, open up channels for this pathogen to come through deeper into your body and to meet the systemic immune response, which is has many more tools available to it, and it's waiting sort of like in a posse to sabotage or take out this pathogen. It appears that some people overproduce this zonulin, which can create a persistent state of hyperpermeability or leakiness, and that can lead to the genesis of autoimmune diseases. We know, for instance, people who develop type 1 diabetes, for instance, are strong overproducers of zonulin. So that's where they first got the idea to manipulate zonulin or zonulin activity at the receptor with this drug agent. We've been treating leaky gut in functional medicine for, you know, multiple decades. There are a lot of natural agents that do a great job with it, like giving L-glutamine, which is the preferred fuel source for the gut cells, so it keeps them nice and healthy, by using other agents. A lot of botanicals are really good at it, and they're traditionally have been used for ulcers and gastritis and bad stomachs and, you know, stomach aches and things like that, but they're usually mucilaginous botanicals. So things like deglycerized licorice and aloe, slippery elm, there's a lot of them, cat's claw, there's a lot of them out there that sort of coat and heal up the gut lining. And botanicals that act as anti-inflammatories, I mean, ginger tea, for instance, has been used forever. So there are a lot of things that we can do to not only heal up the gut lining, but stop this excessive immune or autoimmune action in the gut with things like N-acetylglucosamine. And these things are all perfectly safe and have really good data behind them. Zonulin may work very well, but it is a drug, synthetic drug agent, so it
and
will
we
probably
never know.
Have a...
You know, that's so interesting. I'd like to throw out one other one of my favorite mucilages that I use, as well as all the ones that you mentioned, okra.
Oh, yeah, okra. It's in a formulation I use all the time that I put together called GI Revive powder, actually. It does have okra in it.
It's great.
Anyone who's cooked okra, you know, has seen all the slime kind of in the middle, you know, between the okra rings if you cut it in a traditional way. And all that sliminess is actually what coats and helps heal up the gut lining.
Yeah, it's actually glutamine. It has a high percentage of glutamine in and of itself. So we're
and marshmallows, another great botanical.
Excellent.
Which is interesting because that's where the marshmallow tradition came from. People used to dig up the parts of the marshmallow plant. It was a mallow in the mallow family. It grew in marshy environments. So marshmallow, it's a marshy flower, essentially, but when you dig it up by the roots, there's these little bulbous areas on them that look like little white puffs, and if you cut the root on each side and just take that little white puffy part, it has these glucosaminoglycans in it, where if you crisp them up in a fireplace, they're easier to eat and get down. People used to do that, and they used to eat them for bad stomachs, and it was a mucilaginous coating botanical, and that tradition lived on, and later when the food industry was born, they decided to simulate that just by making little puffs of, cornstarch, basically. So the modern marshmallow derives from the traditional marshmallow. And people don't even know the traditions from which many of our foods come from and things like that. So it really came from a true natural food that was medicinal.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing it. I know if people dig up that plant and they can come with me and Dr. Zampro, and we do lectures where we actually go dig it up, and you could feel that slimy stuff right there. This is, you know, not rocket science. It's old-fashioned folkloric medicine, but it's so wonderful to see that progression from things that were known always traditionally to someone like yourself who's validating it through science. So
yeah, and these days, you know, we can take some of those very powerful natural agents, plant agents, things from, you know, nature, and we can many times make them even more powerful and really zero in on the active ingredients, and we can combine them in really unique, novel ways based on their mechanisms of action and present them maybe in a form that more people would be able to take advantage of or be willing to take. So that would be concentrating them, putting them in a concentrated formula in a pill or in a soft gel or in a medical food or in something like that where, you know, it would be a heavy lift to get a large, you know, amounts of the population to use them in their traditional forms as they once had been used.
Well, that's fantastic. We're going to take a little break right here. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion, our fascinating discussion. We're so lucky to have on board as our guest today, Dr. David Brady. You can always find him at drdavidbrady.com. And, of course, the show will be archived with links directly to Diagnostic Solutions Laboratory and Dr. David Brady's website. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935. But it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. Jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So, if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert, reach for jojoba in your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and we love your comments. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com. As a matter of fact, we just posted a brand new website today, any of you who have businesses or even personal websites know that you're just constantly forced to redo the thing. It's like never ending because now it has to be mobile. So now it's fully mobile. Take a look, naturalnurse.com, and we have tons of new content and evolving content on our website, as well as today's show. You'll be able to find today's show both at naturalnurse.com and, of course, always on PRN.com, Progressive Radio Network. That is the station that is hosting our show here today, and they have a wonderful and searchable archive. And we have over 150,000 podcast listeners, which is really, really wonderful. And we love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or naturalnurse.com. You can leave a message there for Dr. Eugene Zamperone or myself. And thank you again for joining us. I'd like to reintroduce our guest today, Dr. David Brady. He has a long list of attributes after his name, and he is the Vice Provost of the Division of Health Sciences, Director of the Human Nutrition Institute, and Associate Professor of Clinical Sciences at the University of Bridgeport. And they have there a college for naturopathic medicine, the only one on the East Coast, and one of only four true naturopathic facilities for learning in the United States. And he also is the Chief Medical Officer for Diagnostic Solutions Labs, which we're talking about today in terms of why would you want to find out about your GI pathogens. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Brady.
You're welcome. Yeah, when we were talking about the test, we certainly are not the first to use a molecular or DNA-based, and what that means is looking for the genetics or the genes of these organisms versus just growing them out on a petri dish or a plate the way it's been done for many, many, many years. Unfortunately, when you use those older technologies, you can really only grow out a small portion of organisms, those that can live in an oxygen environment, and most of the bugs in the gut are anaerobes. They will not live in oxygen, so you can't grow them out on a plate and try to figure out what they are. So this modern technology using what we call molecular or PCR-based detection of the genes or the DNA of the organism has opened up a window to be able to look at virtually everything that's there. And we're not the first to use this kind of platform to detect pathogens. This is all FDA-approved methodology, and this is the way that large academic medical centers from Mayo to Mass General to wherever is basically identifying pathogenic organisms, whether it's in stool and blood, in cultures, or in other tissue samples. For instance, if someone's in the hospital with a life-threatening antibiotic-resistant infection, you know, systemically known as sepsis, they'll use this same sort of platform, which is called the Luminex GPP platform, to detect what organism it is, what antibiotic resistance genes it has, and what it takes to kill it very, very rapidly. What we did is basically take that same technology and apply it not only to looking for bugs in the gut that are overt pathogens, meaning really bad guys, right, ones that would cause overt diarrhea and the like. And these are the kind of organisms that had been checked for in the old methods when you went to a gastroenterologist, let's say, and had diarrhea or had some gut problems. Now they're starting to migrate to this molecular platform over time, although most still are not doing that in their practices. But if you're at, like I said, a cutting-edge academic medical center, they are. But what we did is apply this technology in a much larger, with a much broader perspective to the organisms that are beneficial, that should be there in the gut, like people know lactobacillus, bifidobacteria, and so forth, the probiotics, if you will. But we also look over a wide range of what are considered opportunistic organisms. These are part of organisms that are there, if you look hard enough, known as commensal organisms, but you don't want them to overgrow. And if they do, they can cause problems. They can cause vague gastrointestinal symptoms, which often gets diagnosed as irritable bowel syndrome. Or they may cause overt autoimmune diseases, including inflammatory bowel problems like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, and the like. But they can be related. with certain overgrowth to rheumatoid arthritis and Hashimoto's and Graves and thyroid problems and all kinds of things. So we use this fully molecular DNA-based technology to basically map your microbiota in the gut. What's there? Good guys, bad guys, potentially bad guys. And with that information, particularly an integrative or functional medicine clinician can then nudge or manipulate your GI microbiota to a better state of health or balance and reduce your risk of these chronic diseases and oftentimes just resolve a lot of the vague gastrointestinal complaints that people have.
So wouldn't it be a good idea if these kinds of tests could be used a little bit more preemptively, sort of like a regular standard of practice analysis every few years? And what about children?
Yeah, well, we do that all the time in functional medicine. I mean, we're looking at this test as one of our foundational tests when people come in and say, listen, I want to be really proactive about my health. And when we do a good medical history or consultation with the patient, particularly if we find out they have any kind of gastrointestinal complaints or if they have a history in their family, not even themselves necessarily, but family members with these autoimmune disorders, with other chronic diseases related to aberrations in the GI environment, then we do this kind of test and we basically fix what we find. You know, we'll use probiotics, we'll use antimicrobial botanicals that'll get rid of some of these bugs while they relatively spare the good guys. And if it's a serious enough situation and we really think we need to act with a heavier hand, then we'll use, you know, prescriptive antibiotics, locally acting antibiotics like Xifaxan or Rifaximin. We'll use those at times, but we really refrain from doing that whenever possible because that's sort of like, you know, detonating a nuclear bomb down there. It kills everything, the good guys, the bad guys, everything. So then you have to sort of rebuild from the beginning, which is much harder to do. So we have much better success. And there's some really good studies, even out of a good friend of mine, Jerry Mullen, a gastroenterologist at Johns Hopkins Medical School in Johns Hopkins Hospital, did a great study on treating these dysbiotic patterns or these changes in the GI bugs with botanicals and volatile oils and natural agents versus prescriptive antibiotics, and actually the natural agents worked better.
Yeah, that's the thing. And by the way, listeners, Dr. Jerry Mullen was a recent guest discussing his paper right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, so you can look in the archives to listen to that show as well. Yeah, very fascinating research that he did. And I am sure that once this zonulin receptor agonist comes out, it's going to have repercussions because it interferes very often with feedback mechanisms. And we see that, let's say, with serotonin uptake inhibitors, which are such common drugs for depression, where the actual mechanism is so isolated on one activity that it does not seem to look at how the body works as a whole.
That's generally the case. That's a very astute observation, and that's one of the problems with drug therapy. I mean, it's very powerful and has a lot of benefits, and I wouldn't want to live in a world without those options when you need them. But you have to keep in perspective that it's basically like swinging a very large hammer at one spot, and it can cause a lot of damage, collateral damage, if you will. And one of my pharmacology professors many, many years ago said to us in class, that drugs do not have side effects. They simply have effects. We like to call the ones we don't particularly find convenient side effects, but they have effects, and they have multiple effects, and they're not all the ones we're looking for. But he was a pretty interesting professor, and he was a pharmacologist by training, and he said to us as training doctors, he said, make sure you prescribe a drug or use a drug as soon as it comes out, before it develops side effects. Which, you know, he was making a joke, but, you know, oftentimes these drugs, when they come out, are touted as the greatest thing since sliced bread, and this is what they do. But then later on, it you know, and they're perfectly safe and no problems, and then later on it comes out, no, they actually have a whole bunch of side effects.
Yeah,
you know?
It usually is, and I think the lawyers get ready for those the minute a new drug comes out.
Oh, they do, yeah. That's the game these days. You see all those commercials. So.
Oh, so true. And I really feel, and of course it's been my lifetime work, of not that we throw out drugs. I am a conventionally trained PhD-RN. It's not that we throw them out. We certainly can see their validity. And in an emergency situation like a car accident, you know, that's not the time. Of course, then I would integrate homeopathy for the shock. But we certainly need surgery. We certainly need drug therapy. But in these long-term debilitating ongoing degenerative illnesses that you focus on so much with autoimmune conditions, really changing what's causing the illness can reverse it. We've seen that time and time again. And yet,
yeah, there's no doubt, but that's not how medicine works, and that's not how the money is made. And we know that because the acute model of medicine works very good for acute conditions. It's been an abject failure for complex chronic disease, but it's been a giant moneymaker because now the big dollar in drug development is not to develop a drug that cures something. That doesn't make a lot of money. You develop a drug that manages a chronic disease process. So you want a patient population that's not going to get better, but you don't want them to die. You want to manage them and maybe help them feel a little bit better through the process so that they have to keep buying the drug over and over and over again, right? As long as they're living, they're going to buy the drug. If you gave them a drug that fixed it, then they would only buy it once or twice or
well,
what
that
have
sounds
you. So
pretty
that's
diabolical,
where the big money is. It's in management of chronic disease.
Yeah, I have
so
to agree.
There's a vested interest financially in the system in not instituting in standard training methods that actually can either stop or you know, significantly make these chronic diseases go away. The engine of financial generation goes away, and that's not going to happen. It's just
and
not
even
happen,
worse, Dr. Brady, what about the fact that almost all of those pharmaceutical agents will, over time, and sometimes not too long a time, require you to take additional pharmaceuticals because of those unwanted effects, such as gastrointestinal problems, more joint pain, dizziness, not being able to sleep, dry eyes, all of those have yet another prescription linked to
well, that's, yeah, that's the classic polypharmacy road, you know, and I'm dealing with that a lot now. And, you know, my new book that will be coming out in July called The Fibrofix is dealing with global pain and fatigue syndromes, you know, fibromyalgia, as it were. And all the people that get diagnosed with it, many who actually have a classic fibromyalgia with a pain perceptual problem, you know, deep-seated in the central nervous system or in the brain, but many, many more of them actually have other things that are not properly diagnosed and treated, and they're told they have fibromyalgia erroneously, but they're put on an amazing array of medications to deal with pain, to deal with depression, to deal with anxiety, to deal with sleep, to deal with, you know, the IBS. I mean, it's amazing. I've had people in my office on 12 medications, and, you know, six to deal with the specific symptom and six more to deal with the side effects of the first six. I mean, at some point you got to say, this is madness. This is crazy.
You are so right, and it's so wonderful to have a physician like you available and more available with all the projects that you are supporting and working on. And we do need to take one more little break right here for a station identification for this wonderful station, which is Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, where you can hear today's show live if you're listening in, and I hope you are. And if you're missing it or someone else should hear this, and I think everyone should hear Dr. David Brady, then go ahead and log back on probably by this afternoon or tomorrow, and the show will be archived for your convenience. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
You're tuned to PRN. We'll keep bringing you the best in alternative voices for social and political news, the environment, health, the economy, and a whole lot more. All you have to do is keep listening. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Dr. Cheryl Selman, the host of What Women Must Know. As a naturopathic doctor, psychotherapist, author, and women's health advocate, I've discovered that there is a lot that women must know when it comes to their health and hormones. So whatever your hormonal or health challenge may be, the answers are waiting for you at What Women Must Know. Where leading authors and holistic practitioners, researchers, and wise elders will give you the keys to getting your hormones back on track naturally. Be sure to listen every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM. And if you didn't catch it live, you can listen 24/7 on the archive. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
The Dr. Peter Breggin Hour interviews the most exciting innovators in the field of mental health, from therapists and researchers to advocates of patient rights. Join me and other pioneers in psychology, psychiatry, and empathic living with the aim of improving your life and the lives of everyone you touch. Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen live or on the archives 24/7 at PRN.FM. Don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
On the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z with your host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, and yours truly, Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. We love you to get in touch. Go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and give us a like, or go to naturalnurse.com. You can contact us with any of your questions. Let me know what you think of the new website. I actually loved my old website. It was kind of just more simple and plain. I'm not a real techie person, but now the new website has all kinds of things and moves around, and I don't know, they call them sliders and whatever they are there, but I'd love to have your feedback about it. And of course, you can view naturalnurse.com now, every part of it in great detail, right on your mobile device. And today we have as our guest Dr. David Brady. We're talking about the many things that he is involved with, such as being the provost of the Division of Health Sciences and a clinic at the University of Bridgeport, which has services in naturopathic medicine and chiropractic and many different natural remedies available there to the community, and analysis with top-notch professionals such as my own partner, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, who functions among his other jobs as a clinic, I guess, director there. So all kinds of wonderful reasons that you should find Dr. Brady, and he's at drdavidbrady.com. We're also talking about Diagnostic Solutions Laboratory. And Dr. Brady, thank you so much. Welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you.
Now, I'm looking at the Diagnostic Solutions Laboratory website, and that's how you find it, diagnosticsolutionslab.com.
Correct, diagnosticsolutionslab.com.
Yes. And it's a great website, easy to read, and if anybody's interested in getting this test for themselves, you have all kinds of information there. I just have one question. Being a Florida resident, as I shared with the audience earlier, that's what I am, although I venture up north now and then if it's warm enough. You know, in Florida, we have a policy, a legal policy, that patients can order their own blood work with no physician recommendation.
Yeah, I know some states have started to enact that. So I don't, the lab, as far as we run the lab, it's basically, it has to be ordered by a healthcare provider that has the scope of practice or authority to order diagnostic laboratory testing.
Okay, because, you know, believe it or not, here in Florida, we can walk our own body into any lab and order any test we want.
Yeah, that's amazing. I like that. I agree with that, although it is fraught with potential problems. I mean, patients can be ordering all kinds of pretty sophisticated medical tests on themselves, and they do not know how to interpret them correctly within the right context of other tests and other parameters. Because, you know, the old adage in medicine when you're trained is, you know, we're not, especially in integrative medicine, we don't treat lab work, we treat patients, and there's a lot more than your labs that you have to consider. Your history, your stressors you're under, your diet, your examination findings, the context of one lab finding within a group of other laboratory testing. So it can be problematic, but I do like the freedom of information and access to things direct to the public. So I'm a bit torn on those types of policies. I think there is a role for a very knowledgeable healthcare provider and or physician involved in interpreting laboratory work, particularly more sophisticated or specialized laboratory work like this is, versus just very generalized things. Our lab is at the high technology incubator at Georgia Tech University outside of Atlanta. So we really go by the Georgia or Atlanta or the state of Georgia rules of ordering. So as far as I'm aware, at least, we don't have a direct patient order policy or capacity with the lab. So you have to have a healthcare provider, basically,
free
to order it for you. But the lab can help you find a healthcare provider near you if you're interested in a test and you contact the lab. But we'd also be very happy to send any information to your current healthcare provider.
That's a great way to do it, because very often people are working with a holistic health provider who certainly may be interested, and they can join the organization and then supervise the interpretation and the ordering of those lab results.
Right, and there's tabs on the website for the clinician or the healthcare provider, and there's other tabs for, you know, the patient, and also there's frequently asked questions and all kinds of different things, one geared toward, you know, the layperson or the patient trying to get some questions answered about the test, and then there's a whole other tab for clinicians that the kind of questions they would ask. So it should all be there. There's a lot of detailed research. There's a very comprehensive scientific white paper that we did on the test. And then there are blogs as well. So there's some interesting articles, a couple of them I've written and have been adapted from medical publications that I've had in the peer-reviewed literature. So check out the website at diagnosticsolutionslab.com.
It's excellent. And one of the really great things on the website is looking at the clinical report, an example of it, what it would look like if someone were to get their report back. Because that clarifies a lot of what you were talking about, where you're looking at these various organisms, some of which people may recognize, some of which they may not, but they can look up online, too, what they may be involved with. So it's really very informative, and it looks like it's extremely simple to review once you get the results.
It is, and for healthcare providers, the lab has clinical support. So the doctor or the clinician can call the lab and go over the results with an expert in the test.
Right, and a question that always comes up, of course, is cost. And it looks like there can be some insurance reimbursement available as well.
Yeah, it's all insurance third-party billed for patients who do have insurance. Medicare patients, there's no cost at all. It's just billed to Medicare. If you have commercial insurance, there is a patient prepaid deposit of, I think it's $125 for the full test, and then the rest is billed to the insurance, and then the insurance pays what they pay, and then any remaining balance is billed to the patient. But we usually get pretty good coverage. Or if the patient even has no insurance or for whatever reason wishes not to send it through their insurance, the prepay, you know, full cost, if the patient pays at the time the sample is put in, is only $359. So for this kind of high-tech molecular DNA-based tests over such a large array of organisms, it's an extremely, you know, cost-effective and reasonable test.
Right, and especially the fact, I'll tell you what, I'm about to go on Medicare. I'm very excited and to be getting to that phase of my life, you know, what they call the golden years.
Yeah.
And I'm going to personally, as soon as that happens, which is in March, that's going to be my first use of my Medicare. Maybe I'll take a little trip up to the clinic there and get everything that can be done to Medicare just for fun. So it sounds like very, very reasonable and accessible, and everybody can learn about it. Teach your doctor about it. That's a great thing. You know, there are more and more doctors in mainstream that I'm finding, Dr. Brady, that are interested in learning about these new things. Sometimes that happens because they're not well, or their wife, or their child.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I mean, they come by the hundreds to the seminars that I speak at and the conferences and symposiums. I mean, they're literally, there's a stampede of conventionally trained physicians looking for this kind of practice paradigm. And that's, you know, been, that's what's fueled the growth of the functional medicine movement. So many of them are disenchanted. You know, they went into medicine for all the right reasons, and then they end up, as you said before, just sort of, you know, painting by numbers and following scripted standards of care to sort of manage someone with chronic illness, and just, you know, throwing medication after it, because that's what the standard of care guidelines say to do. And if you don't do it, you can be in some hot water with your specialty board. So they realize, they're very smart people, or they never would have been able to get into medical school, that there's got to be a better way than that. You know,
there,
it's not what they signed up for, essentially.
So frustrated.
But they're so far in, they can't leave. But they're, a lot of them are miserable, quite frankly. And when they find functional medicine, they're like liberated. They're happy again. They love to practice.
Well, we have to, you know, actually sign off, and you've been, as always, a wonderful guest, and I want to remind our listeners they can find out more about you, listen to the show again. There will be links. Doctor, that's drdavidbrady.com, your website, or Diagnostic Solutions Lab. And,
yeah, thank you. Yeah, if they visit drdavidbrady.com, they can sign up for my newsletter. I'll even send them my last book, a free copy of my last book, and they can stay informed, because I got some really good stuff coming up with the FibroFix Summit. Will be a free online summit in June for anybody who may have chronic pain and fatigue. And then the book will be coming out from Rodale in July, and called The FibroFix. It's even available now for pre-order on either Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. So I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you so much, and thank you, listeners. Until next time, stay healthy.